You're listening to Drake in the Morning with Wes and Sid on 98.1 The Max.
Our guest is Shea Flynn from the Chamber of Commerce, longtime city council member and local man on the street. Today there are stacks and stacks of things to look at. Because some days there's nothing much to complain about, which I really hate. But on some days there's a lot of stuff to complain about. And most of it, I believe, is legitimately in need of some observation and discussion. The city council, which you used to be a part of, and you wisely jumped ship on that deal a long time ago, for the past couple of years, we really have not had a lot to take them to task on. They've been sensible, it seems like, and gotten things done, and Mayor Jim has worked with them closely. Everybody has seemed to have been relatively intelligent and made good decisions. This 2 months they just spent over increases on light, gas, and water. Things evolve. Things cost more money. The proposal was for 4.5%, be about $4 or $5 a month, and wouldn't have been brought back up for 7-8 years. Big picture thinking, next, get it done. No, it just can't be that easy. So after some back and forth and some bitching and moaning, Joe Brown, Justin Ford, Mr. Spinoza, and Ms. Swearingen opposed. They knocked it down to, 2.3%?
2.0%.
Well, yeah, which will be about $3 a month. This, to me, Bill Morrison, who usually is pretty quiet and doesn't make any comment about anything, was bitter, disappointed that this larger rate hike wasn't just knocked out so we can move along to other things. Have I missed something here?
Yes.
This just seems to be short-sighted, myopic, and not big-picture thinking. Or does the new president in place have a part in this decision?
Well, you have to go back further than that to the previous president that just left, Jerry Collins, after a lifetime of service to the community, and we thank him for that. But the issue, there's been a couple of issues around this, and specifically how MLGW decided to bring this to the council. The first was, they notified the bonding agencies in New York City of this potential rate increase in September. They notified their board in October. They didn't notify the council until late November when they told them, you got to do it now. It was a cram down.
Okay.
And the council wisely pushed back against that. And one of the things that Councilman Spinoza has running through the system now is that there has to be a time period undetermined yet, 90 days, 120 days, 180 days, whatever you want it, between notification of the council and when the rate hike has to be voted on so all the information can get there. It can't just be this cram down because they were sitting there saying, it's for all this capital improvement projects, which is what Councilman Morgan and Morrison were hanging their hat on a lot of their arguments. But at the same time, there are 200 employees of MLGW down there, and they're not down there for capital improvement projects. It's for raises, and it's not saying these are bad things. It's just saying how this has been spun is not the totality of the story.
All right, so let me stop you there and see if I understand this. So we're not talking about the percentages here in the increase. That really isn't the point. The point is that this was dumped on them in November out of nowhere. While behind the scenes, the bonds and all these things are being discussed, and then it comes to them at the last minute, if you will.
And so they have to do it now. The house is on fire. So, well, we lit a match and lit the house on fire.
So they're being pressured to make a decision against their will without having this go through proper channels and giving them time to understand it.
Yes.
So November, December, January, February. So there were 3 months to decide this. So, but, with all that being said, they proposed 4.5 and got 2.0. They took this and next year we'll go back to it again. Is that a year grace period to just make some progress, then return to the table to do it again and perhaps get to 4.5?
Well, and the reason I bring up the other is, and you can be pro or con on this, but the idea that it was just capital improvement projects that were funded by this is simply not true. What is going on there? What has the board done in regards to cost savings? How much of this is pension? How much of this is OPEB? How much of this is raises? Where is this money coming from? Because there's a whole MLGW board that actually makes those decisions. The council's just blesses or curses the decision.
Right.
That they don't have the operational control. They just say yes or no, and they weren't given enough information. Then secondly, I think it's important to everything gets framed in the portion of the residential consumer. And, it's going to be $3 a month. Unless you're one of the large manufacturing employers in our community, and it can be $250,000. And even these businesses were not saying, okay, never have a rate increase or anything like that. They're saying, we do our budgets maybe from January to December, and we put in there this much for MLGW. If you're going to increase, give us notice so we can put it in our budget and we don't have this $250,000 hole that we all of a sudden have to fill on the fly. That's part of why the process is important, and
okay,
it's beyond just the $3 a month or whatever the talking point is.
That's why you're in politics and I'm not. And that's why I believe this is, again, one of the perils of being in the media. And television and newspaper, because the only info that anybody gets, like me or the public, is what is written in these pieces. Nobody looks at the nuances that you just laid out. No, that's never presented as part of the package. So with that in mind, it does make a little bit of sense to do this in a partial kind of way, then come back to it next year with more information and more warning, if you will, to big companies and then to
just
decide.
Notice. It's not warning. It's notice.
Yeah.
Just give the council appropriate notice. Give the corporations and residents appropriate notice.
But don't say, get this done now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not fair and it's not right to have them be forced to rush into this.
Well, it was a tactic to get it passed without asking a lot of questions.
Well,
that's
okay.
What a cram down is.
And that's why politics gets really annoying. Is somebody trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes and push it through and nobody will notice. Well, that makes much more sense because it is not unlike politicians to be myopic and short-sighted. But now that you add these components, as I mentioned earlier, that you would provide some more insight. And now this makes better sense.
But the second part of this, and we'll qualify this under the tough love for the council, is... Because I was down there watching the votes yesterday. And
I get a life, man.
That's part of my job.
Oh.
Radio's Drake Hall.
All right, man.
That is my life. It's pathetic.
Is sad.
But here we are. I've made poor choices. The council as a whole lacked leadership on this issue. It was so much confusing because they voted it down and then brought it back up and voted it, and it was a lot of talking at one another.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working, they've all been in the job long enough that it's time for them to step up their game, is what I'd say. Again, they do a good job. This is not like,
take a stand, don't be afraid to speak up.
It's not even take a stand and be afraid to speak up. Be able to work together and work it out. That's what I'm not seeing a lot of here.
Their ability to
work through these problems. Like at one point you had, and this is just me watching as an observer, you had the 4.5% on there. They put the 2.0% on there to be an amendment, and then they voted it down. Well, even if you're against the larger increase, you get that on there, and then you might vote against the increase altogether, but you're negotiating it down. There was just hard positions, and talking at each other and scolding each other, and no one was really trying to get to a decision, and they have got to up their game
now
in that regard.
As you say that, that indicates to me that that this thing was kind of dropped on them, and they haven't had a chance, or they have not informed themselves entirely on, you know, all that is involved, you know, in this process. Hence the bickering and all of that stuff. But I will say, though, that, you know, 2 years into this council, the conflict that usually is a part of the council has not, you know, been that prevalent. It's been pretty smooth sailing. That's why when I saw this today, I thought for the first time in a long time, there's some bickering going on and somebody doesn't understand something or we're missing something here. But it seems to me, but you've been there and you know how this can get and how nitpicky and then the bitching back and forth and the arguing, usually based on misinformation or the wrong agenda or whatever the conflict, you know, may result in. But we haven't seen one of those like this in a long time.
No, and I think that's sort of what I'm getting at. And that's a good thing.
And that speaks highly of the council, I think, that this doesn't happen every 2 weeks like it used to.
Right. But there's a difference between conflict and an adversarial positioning.
Yeah.
And adversarial positioning in divided government is a good thing. That's how you get to the compromises. The two positions come back.
Are they immovable, bound and nailed to the floor?
Because of their previous success, that's a weak muscle for this council. When conflict does arise, they have, from a legislative perspective, they can improve their conflict resolution skills to advance the agenda. Smooth sailing, they are great, and they're not, you know, there's not a lot of grandstanding or showtime to get attention for attention's sake or anything like that.
Right.
They function very well in many regards, but when things aren't going well and they won't always go well, they don't have they're not seasoned enough in that part of the job, and I think that showed up last night in a big way.
That's a good point, and I think that it also shows up in the ages of some of these people pitted against some of the other people of a different age, and some of the folks that have been there for a long time and likely should move along, and some of the young blood that has a fresher take on some things. But that's just part of the conflict of politics in general. But anyway, it's good to know that
adversarial positioning. Conflict is like too militaristic. Coming lawyers see it all the time.
Different opinions.
They don't have any lawyers up there other than Alan Wade sitting there. And that's the one good thing you get out of law school is you learn to be adversaries without it being personal.
Right.
You argue, but you realize you're just arguing an issue. You're not arguing the other person's self-worth or dedication or anything like that.
I think some folks get that and some missed it. But that's politics. But thank you. That does make more sense, but it still seems to, you know, it's, let's just say that this time next year, they should have arrived at a conclusion that gets this off the table for, let's say, 10 years. Is that a hopefully optimistic approach?
You know, a lot of that, and this is where the council's gets a bad rap on this, a lot of that belongs to the MLGW board. Again, there is a whole board that votes on this budget, that goes through this budget, that is in charge of managing this budget. And, you know, they need to make what decisions they need to make and then be prepared to go through a process to defend them to their rate-making agency, which is the council.
Yeah.
The council can't go in there and say, cut here, cut here, cut here, do this, like they can with the city budget. They don't have that degree of control, but they have all this authority and responsibility. So they need to make sure that the board, which is why that notice provision, I think, is very important for going forward and because when MLGW first trotted this out, some of their numbers were wrong, like dramatically off. So, you know,
whose fault is that?
You know,
bookkeepers, accountants.
Yeah, just how they were accounting it. I mean, we'll call it human error. But
that's comforting.
you know, it's, but this all happened behind the scenes, and you gotta get a good look to see it. And it's, again, I'm not saying anybody was bad or anything. MLGW is a great public utility. Jerry Collins was a great public servant.
Somebody just messed up somewhere.
But it, you know, it's a government of humans for humans, and you know, there needs to be processes to get to the best results.
One more reason why I don't understand why anybody would want to be in politics for any reason. Shea Flynn is our guest. He's in politics, kind of. Well, no, he is. Not the city council, which is...
I'm politics adjacent.
you're just near to it, but not, well, whatever. I think that's why he's alive still, because he isn't in the every 2 week fun and games that is the city council. But, okay, that's more clear. We'll see. There's more to be done. We'll get back to it later. This one, I think, is an interesting proposal. Where it goes from here based upon looking at the things involved is the question mark. The MPA and the MFA, the cops and the firefighters, the MPA is the police, MFA is the firefighters. There has been consternation, disgust, and anger over the changes and the benefits and the all that stuff that was cut for retirees and all of that. And it's been going on for 3 or 4 years now. There was no way to reconcile this at the time, so people have been searching for ways to make this up. The mayor has been, you know, on top of the fighting crime concept. We're adding more police officers. All the things we've discussed here endlessly for 2 or 3 years. And the MPA has been pretty quiet, as has the MFA for the past 6 months. Yesterday, the MPA proposed a new concept. Matt Cunningham, who I know personally from the MPA, proposed this idea on behalf of Mike Williams and the entire bunch, a half-cent increase in the city's sales tax to fund public safety. It's a pretty small amount of money on paper, but the council could pass an ordinance to put this on the ballot in the fall, but that's not expected. The MPA has to formalize some kind of signing of a petition, and they need 10% of voters in Memphis that are signed up to vote, which is 238,000, to sign this order to get it on the ballot. So you're talking about getting 23,000 people to sign a petition saying this should be on the ballot to vote for this pretty small sales tax increase to put in place or put back in place the benefits and so forth for the employees that lost them. Are you familiar with this thing?
Oh, yes.
Now, this, on the face of it, and I'm seeing what I saw on the news and what I read last night, that this increase, half a cent, would provide $35 million to restore cuts to retirees and so on and so forth. It seems relatively simple in theory, but is it possible to get 23,000 people in this town to do anything when it regards signing this thing to get it on the
There's a lot to unpack. That's, you brought up about six pertinent issues.
That's what I was afraid of, but... And there's no way to nutshell this, but it is...
Well, we can hammer through it real quickly.
Okay. You got 10 seconds.
Okay. The first part is there's two ways a ballot initiative can go on the ballot. One is a vote of the council, and two is the petition of the citizenry. The petition of the citizenry is there, but because it's levying a tax, they want the largest population, so they gave... It's all registered voters, not those participants.
Right.
That's a high bar.
That's strike one right
but
there.
By example, to run for public office, any public office, Mayor Luttrell, myself, or Mayor Strickland, or whoever has ever thrown their hat in the ring, has to get 25 signatures. To get 25 signatures on your ballot, you have to get about 70. Because, you know, a lot of people have moved and they still are voting in their old precinct and the information has to match up.
70 total?
You have to get 70 so you're comfortable that 25 of them are going to make it through the process. You will see every filing deadline, certain candidates go up there with 25 signatures and wait right before the deadline. They're not on the ballot because three of their signatures got kicked off and they didn't have the requisite number. Point being is if you're going to get 23,000 signatures, you probably have to get 75,000. Just back of the envelope math.
Jesus.
That is not going to happen.
No, and but nor look, is 23, look, unfortunately.
It's illusory. So then the second option is petitioning the council, which I guess they started. I talked to Tommy Malone with the MFA about this a little bit yesterday afternoon because I was asking him what was going on. And, you know, I don't know where they are in the process. I don't know which election they're looking to go at. But what I foresee as the debate here is we've been down this sales tax road before. We did it with pre-K several years ago, and it failed spectacularly. It doesn't seem a lot, but the sales tax is regressive, yada, yada, yada. But more importantly, what the decision the council is going to have to make is, and I was a little bit surprised because when we did it with the sales tax in 2011, I think, that 0.5% increase generated about $49 million.
Okay.
And, you know, consumption's gone up. So I think it's a little bit higher right now than 49. So when you said 35, that confused me a little bit.
Well, that's what the story says. I don't know, but that's what it says here.
I can't dispute it. I'm just saying it's gone down, which seems odd. But if you're going to do this, because once this is maxed out, this is taking us up to the maximum. Germantown's already there funding their municipal schools, Bartlett, all the surrounding municipalities.
Are they a similar raise like this?
Yeah, they're at 9.75% sales tax. Memphis sales tax is 9.25. The state maximum is 9.75. So you will not be able to squeeze any more money out of it. So is this the best use of those funds? If you were going to raise it, is this what the public would want to do? And that's just the discussion that you're going to have. It's like budget writ large. You know, there's a lot of things you want to do that taken in isolation are great, but when you put them up against competing priorities and what is the most strategic response for throwing that up there is where the discussion will, you know.
Why does this story indicate, and this is a story from Channel 5, so I have no idea of the origin of the writer's knowledge, or why would the council say, a flat, you know, no to this on the face of it? This indicates that they aren't interested.
I don't know, but I don't think they were asking them to vote on anything, so I don't know what they could have said no to.
The council could pass an ordinance to put this on the ballot, but that's not expected, is the sentence verbatim.
I don't know where that's not expected, because I know they just had
they even heard about it?
I think they heard about it yesterday, but again, there was no legislation put in front of them. No one asked them to vote on anything.
So
no
do
one,
you expect no one, that Mr. Malone, Mr. Williams will take this further and go to the council?
Yes. They've been doing it. They've been on this since 2014. They're clearly not going anywhere with it. So
this is the latest attempt to revive the discussion.
Right.
Does it have a chance in hell of making it past a number of obvious hurdles?
I think it becomes down to, A, does the council think, you know, and with what's been going on in the stock market and, you know, I don't know where it's at today, but the volatility, where we are as a community. I mean, the hurdles, if you lay them out, is first the council. Does the council think this is the best way to get new revenue, given whatever our climate is? Then does the council think this is the best way to spend any new revenue we get? And then finally, will the people go along with it? I mean, I will remind people in 2011 when all we were going to do is offer pre-K to help the youngest people that need it, the public said no at a 72% rate. So anytime you're asking the public to raise taxes on themselves, it is a high hurdle.
Even though it is such a small amount. So your point is that if this were to be approved and the sales tax were to go up to 9.75, you've maxed out right there.
Yes.
And you can't do it again ever for any reason.
Unless the state legislature raises the cap.
So that's hurdle number one in politics, is to approve this and have it be the last one you ever do.
Approve this for this reason.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. What other competing reasons? You know, MATA has a bunch of needs out
there. So the pre-K roads concept.
Potholes, pre-K.
Which was a pretty big deal and was very important. The public said no resoundingly. Screw the kids. Who needs
it? Yes. Yes. At 3-1.
Perfect. Well, so this well-intentioned idea, well, we'll see. This is not the last we've heard of this.
I would say that's not the last we've heard of that. That's not the last we've heard of a potential sales tax increase. And, you know, as Mayor Luttrell, I'm sure, just said, you know, we've got a community with needs. What's the best way to address those needs? Where's the revenue going to come from? Which revenue streams need to go to which? These are the questions that the council's going to have to ask, and in this case, the public's going to have to answer.
A short break. We will talk to Shay more in a moment. I have to do some things here because it is very, very busy time of year with Valentine's Day and with things going on everywhere. Josh Hysall, one of our show sponsors, has been for a long time. I want to thank him for always being on the program and supporting it. And you should support the folks that the folks that sponsor us and support us. Josh sells houses. That's the deal. He has a system for this that has worked out for a number of people. It's quite effective. He knows how to do it. Does it every day, and sells homes every year by the hundreds. Experience is a big part of the game. He has a plan which he puts into place with you. The house is put on the market. It is shown. It is sold. And you make the money that you wanted to get for it in the first place. The plan is, if it isn't sold in 45 days, which is unlikely, he will step in and make the payments for you or buy the house outright. So there's a plan. The fees are flexible. No upfront costs. And you can talk to him about it face-to-face by calling him and getting a meeting set up, and then get your house sold and carry on with your life. 461-8147 or joshsellsthemidsouth.com. Josh Hysall is the dude who will sell your house for you. So by all means, holler at the boy. If your car is acting up, I want to give a plug to our friend Alan. He is working his butt off. He's been sick for a month with the flu, but he keeps working because he is committed. And he's doing some work for us this week on my wife's car. And he'll take care of your needs, too, over there in Whitehaven on Winfield at 51. The shop has been there for 30-plus years, and Allen's Automotive knows exactly what to do, when to do it. Tire rotation, oil changes, maintenance is important. So for goodness sake, if your car is jacked up, don't just stop in at some place you have no idea what's going on. Go to somebody that we know who works on our cars and will not, price gouge or, lie to you outright. Allen's Automotive is on Winfield, 332-3279. He's on the Facebook. He has all them little, website things like everybody does, and you can see him there or just go by and see him and chat with him and get your car taken care of. Shay Flynn is our guest discussing this, that, and the other. There's so many things today stacked up here.
Can I make a plug, Drake?
For Sherry's Berries?
No, but it is Valentine's plug.
All right.
If you're looking for the most romantic thing that you and your significant other can possibly do on Valentine's Day, the Chamber from 7:30 to 9 a.m. will be hosting noted New York Times columnist and author Thomas Friedman will be in town.
Really?
He will be giving a talk on the big trends shaping the world today, economics, technology, and geopolitics. Romantic as hell.
If you find intellectual discussions about the future of our planet, which is bleak, this is romance at its highest level.
Tickets for chamber members are only $50,
$100. You got to pay for this?
This is a New York Times best-selling author. Yeah, you got to pay for this.
That ain't romantic.
Well, I'll get you a comp. Okay. I'll get right. you in the
Do you get chocolates and some flowers and stuff too?
You get knowledge. What is sexier than knowledge? Nothing.
point.
At least that's what I tell myself.
Yeah. Well, no. I think that that's a very good point. And you don't have much. There's not much knowledge
around here. And it's in the morning. So there, boom, you're banging Valentine's Day out. Maybe go out to a little brunch after that.
Sure.
Afternoon delight.
And it's
boom.
Done.
And you're at home. Time to watch the basketball game.
Well,
Valentine's Day solved.
I've got no retort for any of that, and I think that sounds great. And the date is when again?
February 14th, Wednesday morning.
It is the 14th this year.
Yes.
So Friedman, who's an obvious whore for money, is coming here on Valentine's Day, blowing off his wife to come make money to speak to you guys.
Well, he is coming to speak to the entire state of Tennessee. We're just the first stop
on
it. But you know, I mean, it's something to do. You'll learn something. You'll become closer. It'll strengthen your relationship. I'm not
knowledge
saying,
is power and love.
It is non pill form Viagra.
Wow.
When you really get down to it.
Write that down, Sid.
Okay. Roger.
I'll save that. He's a very interesting and a smart fellow. So that is a good idea. All kidding aside. If you're going to get up in the morning at 7:30 and go do this, you do love your old lady, or vice versa. So good luck and go for it. Tickets are gettable how?
Go to the Memphis Chamber website. You can get them there.
Okay.
MemphisChamber.com.
We've discussed this forever. It's depressing as the dickens, but it is what it is. New data finds Memphis is the poorest large metro in America. These numbers come from 2016. That was 2 years ago, or about a year ago. Not encouraging. And the words here used are alarming. The discussion, the basis of it, looks at the inequality in the wages, the wage differential between black and white, $20,000 per household, median income, which I thought sounded a bit excessive. It seems that we do the best we can. Well, maybe that's the wrong phrase. Maybe we don't. But we certainly hear a lot about hiring and contracting and trying to, employ, you know, white and black and whomever has the best company. They bid on jobs. And I thought that was changing in this town.
It is. But you don't turn a battleship around on a dime.
So this information that is about a year and a half old is accurate. But likely some things have been altered to where it isn't as ugly as it appears.
Yeah, if you go
once
back,
again in this news story.
I think that 26.9%, or we had a story in September that the rate has actually fallen a little bit. We were higher than that. So, I mean, we're moving in the right direction. We're still in a very – it is the challenge of our time. Is the poverty rate.
Yeah.
If you solve that, if you drop that number down to 19%, it's about $1.5 billion back into the economy per year. If you raise the wages, that's more money that can go in there. It's just how do you do it? It's a delicate balance, and that's one of the things that the chairman circle wakes up every day, and there's no one answer to the poverty problem.
Well,
there's a lot of different avenues you have to hit. I mean, we declared war on poverty in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
That hadn't really worked out yet.
Not yet. Ed Ford Jr., I think, does sum this up intelligently and with a nice response. We can change it, he said, the cycle of poverty. It may take 5 years. It may take 10 years. It may take one generation, but the work should start now. That is well said and likely an accurate accounting of what's going on. The city council and the county commission will be having a joint gathering in which they will discuss the numbers and work together to determine how the governments can improve the problem. That's encouraging, and I don't want to open up this can of worms or discuss this right now, but it came up yesterday about this never-ending situation of two mayors, two governing bodies, and the problems that are wrought from that situation, which isn't going to change anytime soon. But I think that maybe, I hope in our lifetime, that somebody looks at this, seriously, like Louisville did and like Jacksonville did and a number of other places.
Nashville.
And you combine the governments, you got one mayor, you got one council, and it seems the process would be a lot less cumbersome. The reality of it, I don't know. But
it would be.
Everybody said, you know, 10 years ago, it has to start with the schools. Well, it did. And that's still in a transitional, nightmarish kind of phase. So maybe when that is worked out, if that's possible, in your lifetime, in my lifetime, I wonder if we'll ever see that. But it crops up more and more in these issues that we address, poverty, and so on and so on, and the inequity among this, that, and the other. If we had one governing body to make decisions and not two, and then all the other adjacent...
Well, there's a lot of bureaucratic savings
that go
with it. And that's right. That's something that's going to be a ongoing conversation. Those hurdles are extraordinarily
high.
Has
it ever had in serious, you know, private conversations that you're a part of among... Movers and shakers.
Yeah, you know, we tried to do it in 2010, I think, was the last time it was voted on.
Yes.
And it passed in the city, did not pass in the county because it has the dual vote requirement.
Mm-hmm. It's about race, let's face it.
There's a lot of that. That was pre-schools.
Yeah.
Immediately pre-the-schools discussion. So I think we'll keep coming back to it. But in the meantime, before, getting rid of the two mayors and the council commission system, there's plenty of areas of functional consolidation where the governments can work together to better share more efficiently use the cost burdens and divide the responsibilities.
Yeah.
I mean, there's opportunities for incremental improvement that we continue to need to pursue. And we need to drop some of the turf wars that go on with that.
Yep.
And I think you're seeing some movement in that direction. It's not quick movement, but you are seeing some movement based upon where we were maybe 7-8 years ago.
You know, that is well said. And that is a nice, succinct way to, you know, put it. But from the aerial view, as we all say these days, I mean, it would be difficult. There would be some hurdles to get over. But it seems to be so, you know, clearly obvious that it would make the operation of this city and all that stuff a lot easier and simpler if you streamlined this entire thing and cut out some of the, as you say, just this never-ending, you know, bureaucratic nonsense that
this IT
gums up the works.
$15 million. Save us. IT department.
Yes, and you hear, you know, these nightmares about the city computer system and how dysfunctional that is, and I've heard city, county, law, it's...
Well, they don't talk to each other.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, literally, the computer systems don't.
And that is a problem that people don't address, and it is persistent, and it is part of everyone's life that is involved in the system in some way. You see the dysfunction when you're in the middle of it. It's like, oh my God, they got no clue. No one talks to each other, either, you know, in that form or, you know, face to face. It's a battle. It's a you know, gang war, turf war.
Yeah.
And it does get tiresome. Well, we will hope that things continue to improve.
Well, they.
That's all we can do.
You know, you got to stay positive.
You don't have to, but it's better to.
You're going to accomplish more if you stay positive.
Yes, you are.
It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, because it's not. It doesn't mean you're not going to have frustrations and setbacks, because you will. But we have improved. We've continued to improve. We need to accelerate the rate of improvement. We need to, because other cities are improving as well.
Yeah.
And we were starting, you know.
As you said last week, you know, this comes, it gets down to the nut cutting. It's about money. And the disbursement of money, you mentioned last week the exact numbers, I believe, how much Nashville got and how much Memphis got, and that fund disbursement, and that's got to change. And until this city gets its act together, there are some reasons why they get what they get and we get what we get.
Well, they're not all good. I mean,
no.
It is the theory that we are the largest city in Mississippi.
Right.
That's how the Tennessee state government treats us sometimes.
And that is not a positive thing. I mean, but it is on the shoulders of people like you and, you know, Jim Strickland and others to accomplish these things and to make progress. So we'll hope that that's the case and that that's what gets better. Speaking of Jim, I saw a flash this morning because we have TV screens in here and all kind of stuff going on. And did I see that Jim is now playing for the Grizzlies? Is it that desperate?
Yeah. Well, first off, when you say you saw Jim Strickland flash, I was like, well, he's really taking his constituent service to a strange place.
But I saw him wearing a Grizzly uniform, and I believe he was on the court. And I wondered if he played against Atlanta last night or if he has joined the team in his spare time.
Well, that will answer the tanking question for sure.
I mean, they've totally given up.
I mean, he's a tall guy, but yeah. I don't think he's going to be boxing out LeBron anytime soon.
Unlikely, but I think I saw him and that mascot thing.
I mean, he's better than I am at basketball. You'd rather see him in the Grizz uniform.
Well, he's taller. That's just the advantage he has right off the bat. But I saw him on a TV ad with that bear thing, and I thought, what is this about? But I guess he has not joined the team, but in fact he has, so they can really suck.
I think they signed him to a 10-day contract, and you know we're just going to see where it goes from here.
I don't see him being a really efficient point guard and passing and all that stuff, but we'll see.
No, but when they play San Antonio, he and Greg Popovich can have massive
I can't see that going well either, because Jim's too nice and Pop is a dick. So
Pop calls it like he sees it. He's going to deliver the tough love and the lumber.
I love the guy because he does not hold back anything. Thank you, Shay. I'd like for you, we just gave you a chance to plug the Tom Friedman thing on Valentine's Day, which is going to be for people around town that want to go meet him and enjoy an intellectual kind of concept and approach to Valentine's Day. I'd like for you to buy these for your wife. She's listening right now, I'm guessing. Sherry's Berries and Roses. She deserves them for putting up with you year-round, so I would like for you to go to berries, berries.com. Enter the code, and the code is?
Drake.
D-R-A-K-E.
Maybe I've already bought them.
I don't think you would. I think you're lying. But today only, Shay, today only, you get a dozen red roses and the dipped gourmet berries in a designed gift box. It's beautiful. $49.99. How do you beat that? The berries are cold, the flowers are fresh, guaranteed. Go to the website, berries.com, berries.com. Code Drake, dozen red roses, dip gourmet, beautiful strawberries in a pretty box for your Valentine. Use the code Drake and everybody will be happy. Do that. Thank you. Thank you, Shay Flynn. We will see you next Wednesday. And we'll get back into all of this and talk about it some more. We'll do a break and come back in a moment with more live commercials for Valentine's Day. Please stay tuned.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.